This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? Like, he sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello, and welcome along to episode 17 of The Worst Idea of All Time, a podcast in which Tim Batt and myself, Guy Montgomery, watch and review Sex and the City, the film, at pace. We have just finished our 17th screening and are joined by a very special guest who has just watched the film for the second time in her live-long life, Amy Hogarth.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
I mean, we're sitting next to each other. Are you going to say anything, Tim?
Yeah, I was waiting for an in. Amy, it's so good to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear yours, Tim.
Thanks,
man.
That is all that's happening here. We can't see. I mean, Amy and I obviously in the same room here in New York. Tim, presumably in the studio in Grey Lynn, Auckland, New Zealand, at Little Empire
HQ.
Studio?
That's cool.
I built it, Amy.
We're just on a sofa.
And by built it, I mean I put some microphones into a room and now it's a studio.
Okay, we can say the same about Guy's sitting room then.
Guy's sitting room is not a studio. Sorry. I did not ordain it.
Moments ago, you were quite dismissive of our environment. You said, we're just sitting on a couch.
Yeah, so but now then all I of a sudden, like, we're in a studio. That's a studio, suddenly, if there are microphones on it.
Yeah. Anything's a studio if you put two mics on it.
Folks, you might know Amy from her work on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, perhaps from BBC America's Almost Royal. Or maybe you've caught her doing stand up, of which she is, I assume, very good.
No, you got that last bit wrong.
Oh, you didn't let me up. You blew it.
Yeah,
gave it away.
You got it wrong at the end. Amy, she performs a lot, but she stinks at stand-up. She's a real fucking rotter. What sort of live comedy do you do best?
I don't do any. I didn't know when to chip in. I used to do it, but not for like 5 years.
Why'd you get out the game?
Got out the game. I wasn't really that into it, and I only did it to get more work. And then when I got more work, I stopped doing it, but then I stopped getting work. So it backfired.
Well, no, it didn't. You're gainfully employed here in New York City.
I think about going back to it every now and then, and I just think, can you imagine starting out?
I have literally done just that here in New York.
Oh, yeah, you have, yeah.
And I can't imagine it. And your guttural reaction to the very idea of it is on the fucking money.
You have to pay to play. Yeah, remembered.
I went to one of those mics. It did not go well.
Did you get your own money's worth?
I did not get my $5 worth. I don't think that the three remaining comics at the back end of the 2.5 hour show $5 to perform on got their money's worth either. Neither from my set nor theirs.
They could have just watched Sex and the City in that time.
That's right. And honestly, I think it's a measure of how bad that gig was. That would be a more enjoyable and productive use of time.
Fuck, that is dire. That is a real indictment on whatever gig you dragged your bones to, man.
It's called the People's Open Mic. I think it's at 3 p.m. on a Sunday in Manhattan at a bar called Otto's Shrunken Head. The guy who runs it is a fucking scam artist. He's a psychopath and I will not stand for it.
He just plugged it, though, weirdly.
Now, yeah, but in a pretty negative light.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think on the record criticism as a plug.
If you gave the like time and locations, I was like, I could get myself down there if I want.
Yeah, but on the back end of that recommendation, whoever interprets that as a plug deserves to be at the show.
If you didn't get to the end of it, you'd already left to go.
Yeah. That's true. I guess hey, people Amy. Don't listen to podcasts on the go. Everyone sits in one fixed position and they cannot move until the audio is complete. You lunatic. Before guests are on a podcast, have you ever listened to one of these?
I just listen to them every time I need to plan my Sunday afternoon.
God, I hope they have some recommendations specific to the area I'm in.
Oh dear,
Amy.
Yeah.
Before we get into the film, how's your year been, mate?
Every single time, do not answer this question. Tim drags his fucking heels as hard as he can through the sand, the asphalt.
I wanted to get to know me better.
Fuck no. You! This isn't a bit. I want to hear from Amy.
This is
a guest on our podcast. She's a great guest. I want to hear how her year has been.
This is for off
Thank
the
you,
mic,
Tim. And also, I believe that Tim and I last saw each other about a year ago, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah.
I've had a good year, I think, looking back through the months.
Take us through. What are some highlights?
No. Yeah.
Do you know what? I've traveled so much. Guess how many trips I've done?
I'm going to say 6.
Nearly. 35. 5.
What?
Yeah, 35. You guessed it, Tim.
I went the wrong way.
It's too many. It's been highs, but it's also been too much.
It's tiring to travel.
Yeah, it's been fantastic opportunities.
And some of those flights have been, if not business, maybe first class occasionally.
Guy.
No, but it's not
yeah,
like...
Yeah, sometimes for work, I get flown in style.
How cool is that? That is so cool to me.
I never get used to it. I'm always grateful and I always say
All right, mate.
We've spoken about it at length, though.
I take everything they offer me.
Yeah, of
so
course.
So drunk. I'm just pressing the chair all the time, all the buttons.
Yeah, and it doesn't impact the person behind you because of the amount of space afforded.
And
these
I don't
premium
need space.
Customers.
If you've not looked me up by now, I don't need any space on a flight.
That's right. I remember from Googling you earlier that the first return is Amy Hoggart height.
Is it?
That's so based on a previous search that Guy's done.
Yeah, I'm always too nervous to ask you. Like, I need this information.
What was your favorite place that you went to?
Oh, Tim, I just really
Great
feel like
question.
You're doing everything.
Guess what? I think my favorite place is relevant for the film. Then everyone's happy. I went to Mexico.
That's awesome.
And I didn't shit myself. I'm thinking. I don't think I did because you would remember that.
Yeah, you
How many
would
times
know.
Have you shit yourself recently?
I've never shat myself, and I'm not the type of person who would lie about that. I would be...
Yeah. Point of order.
As a baby, maybe, yeah.
Point of order. So here's someone who said, I went to Mexico, and is like scanning their memory audibly and visibly for whether or not they shat themselves. And then 20 seconds later, to finally state, I have never shit myself.
No, do you know, because I'm the type of person who would shit themselves.
Well, yeah, because tell us about your friend who recommended the movie to you when it was released in cinemas.
So I actually, this is the second time I've seen it. I saw it when it came out when I was at college, at uni. And I'd started doing comedy, you're welcome. So I was like already in a comedy troupe or whatever. And a friend of mine was like, you've got to see Sex and the City. It's so you. It's exactly your type of comedy. There's this amazing scene in it. And I couldn't stop thinking about how much you'd love it. And like, it was like you'd written it. It's the one where Charlotte shits herself.
Oh my God. That is damning.
It's if I wrote that scene, guess what? It would be better. Like, you don't even see anything. You just, it's all done in post with the sound
That's
effects.
Right.
I want to see something embarrassing.
That's right.
She's got her bum facing a glass, like a window, and there's a cleaner inside. The cleaner doesn't even get, we want to see her POV.
That's right. I remember when, like much later in the film, when Carrie is reassuring Charlotte that maybe she's had her allotment of bad luck this year because she shat herself in Mexico, you said, and this is verbatim, also, this is like as though the thought has been plaguing you for the 45 minutes between, also, we didn't see any poo. That's what I really wanted.
That was the thing missing from that scene. I can understand that. They
I
set
didn't
it up
know you're writing down.
She's wearing very, like, sort of high fashion, it's not quite yoga pants. It's a very airy attire. It's kind of like a almost a jumpsuit
flowy
style
Can
of
I
pants.
Quote
very
that?
Flared. Yeah.
Well, as soon as she comes in the outfit you're describing, fuck, she's ripped.
Do you know,
on the 17th of May, checked
out her abs. Yeah, it's actually quite interesting because in hearing that back, it's like I feel like it's at the point 17 screenings in, you know, I'm so relaxed around this movie. It's like being around family where it's like you sort of just, you say, you're not even thinking about what's coming out of your mouth. You know, you're just reacting in real time. There's no filter.
I remember everything. Yeah. You said it like you were jealous, like in the way you would talk about like a bodybuilder and be like, oh God, he's in good shape. Like,
you know how I'm always ogling those bodybuilders. I guess it just hadn't, I think why it took me off guard and I said it with such intensity is I hadn't even really, because I always noticed that Carrie's, SJP's character is ripped and it must be written into the...
Is she?
Yeah. She every, like both films, she gets her abs out and she is absolutely cut to ribbons. and I think because I haven't noticed that in Charlotte before, I was like, oh, whoa. Like,
but she's a runner.
Yeah, but running doesn't give you that, running doesn't give you that definition on your torso.
You're talking to the wrong... Yeah, no, I don't. I don't know what to say then.
Literally say... You can say anything. Such is the beauty of this podcast.
I really don't like the bit where Samantha's got a bit of a tummy and everyone's a real bitch about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
We're,
Guy and I have talked about this quite a lot because we were both, when we first saw it, really confused as to what the film was getting at. Like when they do that shot of her midriff, it's kind of like, because you see a bit of her cleavage and let's not kid around, Kim Cattrall's got stonking breasts and there's a little bit of that at the top of the shot. And then like, but it's really weirdly framed. And we were like, why are we looking at her? Because she's also holding a dog. It's like, are we looking at the dog? What are we looking at her tits? What are we looking at here?
Yeah,
and then
so
they start making
fat jokes for the eyes.
Because there's such a lack of discernible gut there that we could see that it was like, it didn't even get. Yeah, it's like, it's pretty bad. But it's even bad storytelling because it wasn't obvious to us what they were getting at, you know?
I could not keep my eyes off her sweet tits. Her lovely fluffy dog. Guy's face when you described how good her boobs were is also
what would my face do
your
then?
Face is like, but you were just winking and like smiling at me.
I was not winking at you. I was not winking and smiling. You okay. laughed and I was like, yeah, he's funny. Tim's being funny.
Oh, I thought it was like, yeah, that woman's rad. Oh, that's I mean,
how is there so much room for miscommunication between
exactly
us? No, I mean, but to her credit, 50 years old in this film and absolutely
50.
Yeah, this, at the very end she turns 50, remember? And they say, to the next 50.
Oh, yeah.
And we laughed because we were like, you motherfuckers aren't going to live to 100.
You don't know that. Well, not big. We know that. Fucking dies in a shower. You know about this, Amy? Did you see this the other
month? Told me.
It's pretty wild, eh?
I told Amy about that. Amy actually had a great idea for a big spin-off.
I did. That was a good idea of mine, actually. So when he... I do my own reviews. When he leaves the wedding, why didn't he drive to a coffee shop, reconnect with a friend that he hasn't seen since high school, and then start his own spin-off, which is the new Friends? Because it's the opening of Friends.
But you know, at the start of Friends, famously, Rachel shows up. Ross is going through his divorce, and he says, I just want to be married again. And then Rachel walks into the cafe to visit Monica, her old friend, and she's dressed in a wedding gown.
She's just left a guy.
And Chandler very quibbly says, "And I just want $1 million." But she's just jilted Barry. And so I guess the idea is, I mean, wouldn't you love to see this, Tim? Wouldn't you just love to spend some time with whoever the fuck Big used to roll around with in high school?
Absolutely. I reckon it would be like a lacrosse teammate. I get
100%.
A bit of a,
I think it's Kavanaugh, don't you think?
What do you say?
Fucking is.
Sorry for
making
everything so topical. Kavanaugh.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. He like there's a passing physical similarities between Big and him.
No,
Big doesn't shout though, which I appreciate. That's one thing he's got over Supreme Court justice.
He doesn't get screaming and start wanging on about beer. That's the only good thing I'll say about Big. Actually,
what's that?
He doesn't get screaming and wang on about beer.
Yeah, you really didn't like Big.
Don't like him.
How fucking good was that, though, in the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, just how much we discovered that man loves a beer? There's something so bizarre about it. It was so entertaining. He loves beer. He needs you to know it. It's like how Big can't read, and he needs you to not know that because he's in charge of a lot of money. I don't know if Guy has clued you into all the lore that we've sort of created through learning little tidbits through Sex and the City 2 in our 17 now watches of Sex and the City 1. But Mr. Big is illiterate, and he's managed to swindle his way to it.
Absolutely. Which actually ties in high-paying job that he is
role.
Well outside of his depth in, and he's melting down in this movie. I actually can't remember. I can't exactly retrace our footsteps, but rest assured the research.
It's because in the second movie, Sex and the City 2, ever heard of it, Mr. Big is in a big office building, and the guy, he's a financier, so he's in charge of a lot of money. He's throwing around a lot of money, but when we see him in his office, there's no computer whatsoever in there.
No, there's a screen on the wall, but there are no keyboards. There's nothing.
It's like a tally. It's like
any
a TV.
Sort of input.
Yeah, it's very odd. There's no clue that he is literate, and that makes it all the sweeter in Sex and the City 1, where he is. Do you say transposing? If it's just words, he's copying all of the famous love letters from other people because he doesn't know how to write, so he's literally just copying the symbols.
And
like
it also it ties in with another fan theory just an observation you made, which was the night before the wedding.
Yeah,
and I actually love your take on this, Tim. On a personal,
I love Amy's.
Was just that
he I love
was
guys.
He was oh my gosh. he was writing his vows the night before.
Not
of course, because if you can't read and write, and you've hidden this from your soon-to-be wife for as long as you've been together. Like, of course, it's embarrassing to, like, right before the wedding, be like, oh, by the way, babe, I might need some help with my vows because I'm illiterate.
Especially because she's a writer.
You took real umbrage with the fact he was doing it the night before.
It's so fucking lazy.
Yeah,
it's
that is
weird.
Terrible.
You don't write your own vows in the UK, really. It's not a thing, but it's a big thing here. And I think it's so important in the States that you should give it a bit more thought.
Tim, did you write your own vows?
I did. Yep. Zoe and I write our own vows.
And when and how soon before the wedding did you do that?
Oh shit, why did you do it the night before?
I think it was one of those things where like it was a draft for a long time that I kept coming back to and, you know, shopping.
So what you but work you're shopping. You're saying you did the work.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
Shopping. Picking up sentences from pre written vow website.
Well, you don't
also
fuck around
don't
with wedding
keep
vows.
Quoting He keeps quoting Byron, and that annoyed me loads because Byron is like not – he was always cheating on everyone. I think he had an incestuous relationship as well. Like he's the worst guy to be quoting to someone that you're trying to have a monogamous lifelong relationship with. Like he's got everything wrong.
But he's – Big isn't digging for Lord Byron. Carrie brings the library book into the bedroom and she reads him Lord Byron.
She gets it wrong and then he continues to get it wrong near the end when he quotes Byron.
Yeah.
So he's never written his own vows. He's never written his own words. He's just quoting a philandering, incestuous.
Yeah, you're obsessed with the idea of Byron effed his sister.
I do. It's something like that. I need to look it up. But I think it's like his half-sister or his stepsister or something.
I'd just like to go into bat, not for Big nor Byron, but just I feel like there's...
For incest. Get in there, guy. Defend, please.
I feel like there's validity to making love to blood family members. And moreover, I think we'll gloss over that powerful point I'd like to make. But
I want to get back to the incest thing, so bookmark that. But what do you want
to
say, guy?
Do they listen to the podcast?
One of my sisters listens to the podcast. Yeah.
And the hot one?
Respectfully done, Amy.
Both of them are hot, Amy. You piece of shit. They're my sisters. I'm not going to pick favorites.
Both of them are really sexy, Amy.
But I think there's validity in writing your vows the night before. Like, it's not like the writing process isn't all just putting the stuff down on paper. Part of it is walking around, letting the ideas circulate, prepare themselves to spill forth. And I feel like doing it the night before, if you back yourself, I mean, in this instance, it's obvious that Big's just a nervous wreck who's illiterate and doesn't want to get married to his bride-to-be. Mm. So maybe not in this particular instance, but I wouldn't write that off in real life entirely.
Okay, I do feel like I've been too critical.
No, Amy, back yourself. He hasn't even started the process of committing anything to paper. fuck.
You also didn't like the way he was writing it.
I worry that like I'm a geeky person who would put more work into it, and I should let people have their own styles. Like maybe he has been thinking about it.
Yeah, but you didn't like that he was writing it in his big leather bound book.
I loathe everything about him. So I was like, ugh, leather folio. And then I was like, actually don't. That's not a valid criticism. That's quite me.
That's not you.
That's just businessman, you know?
Yeah, it's a legal pad. It's his big book of ideas.
So back to the incest thing. I have a question.
Classic.
Do you think it counts as incest if it's your, if it's a cousin, if it's a first cousin? Is that incest?
Absolutely.
Oh,
first cousin.
Because in that case, Einstein also incestuous.
I mean, I as a Brit, like a lot of our
family.
No. But like the royal family, they're all
yeah,
seemingly with their own cousins.
That is a tree where the branches start to turn into the trunk pretty quickly. Eh?
I don't know. I don't fancy any of my cousins.
No,
that's good.
So,
I'll go on the record as co-signing to Amy's bold statement.
Yeah,
I'm also not attracted to any of her cousins.
I don't fancy any of Amy's cousins, but you should see my cousins, man.
Are they as sexy as your sisters?
Like, you can't double down on
bracket,
this bit.
Absolutely.
No good, man. Hey, Amy,
late.
We've got a segment on the podcast called The Shining Light, where we talk about what our...
I know, because Guy, Tommy, and I don't have one.
I will keep talking to buy you valuable seconds, where we reveal one part of the movie that we genuinely did like on this watch. This is your second watch. Was there any single moment, anything will do in the film delivered by anyone that you liked?
It doesn't need to be a particular moment. It can be a feeling that the movie conjured in you. I've got to say, just while Amy pauses for thought, that... And I observed this to her. So I've seen this movie 17 times. I think that the sort of snark and the way I bristle at certain moments of the film is not necessarily earned, but to be expected. Amy was operating on the same level of fury and vitriol as I was, and also driving the car. Like, I try to create a neutral environment so that it's like the person who I'm watching with, say, as a guest, can react however they feel.
Good
I was
you.
Overjoyed by your response to a lot of this film.
I was angry driving.
Yeah. But while angry driving, was there anything you drove past and you're like, oh, that's nice?
Okay, I thought of something. And the way that I thought about it, and this is a tip for your future guests, is I thought if I had to watch a scene again, which scene would I least mind watching?
That's not a bad idea.
So I really like Charlotte's daughter. She's a serious cutie pie.
Yes.
And I like all the scenes where she's... I like all the scenes with her in them, just her. And it's cute when she says sex into the phone and Guy... remark that I did laugh out loud, but that was like 45 minutes into the film.
When she
I wrote this down. 45 minutes in, I laughed. That's the first time.
Good God. When she hands the Valentine's Day card. Oh, no, wait, what is it? Is it Valentine's Day? She gives
it's
something
like,
to Carrie.
It's just
what
an invitation.
That?
It's around Halloween. It's not. I don't even know if it's a holiday card. It's just like a general, hey, Carrie, thinking of you card.
It's a little gift. No, because she gets posted the Valentine's Day card. So it must be some, like, a little tiny box of chocolates or something, but she gives it to Carrie. And that is a genuinely adorable moment. The child actor playing Lily is gorgeous. She's so
adorable. You look at the details of the card, it's a fucking mess. She's taken an orange crayon and just run riot over the border.
That did annoy me. Just cast someone who's better at making cards. I did also like, you know, kids at that age are so like purposeful and determined about doing the stupidest shit. And I like it when she's got that cupcake purse and she puts the phone in, like she knows what she's up to. That's a good.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things happen in that film. You're like, why did that character do? There's no reason for that. But I understand a child purposely doing that.
Yeah, only because there's no reason kids do anything. So that's a bit of an easy thing to write into your film.
Yeah.
And then the kid did this because, I don't know, she's four.
That's the only bit that makes
That was the way that Mattress Pikelet King wrote all of the characters in this film. He,
what's that?
It's the name of the director. Writer-director, producer.
I said, what's that? Which is a clue to me not thinking that.
But he wrote all of them as toddlers and then just...
but cast people who are a bit too old.
Stuck with the original cast from the TV show. What was your shining light, Tim? Sounds like a tough week for Timbo.
Can I? I want to reveal something about my watch this week. I really was on my phone a lot. I really felt like I was.
I know.
To the point where I'm almost ready to like text myself a watch, which is devastating because we've watched it a bit in the last little while. But like, I was taking the piss today. I was there. Like it was on, headphones firmly in place. Like audio wise, there was no escaping it. And I was looking at it, you know, but I was definitely on my phone a lot.
You weren't like mindfully focusing on it. You weren't present for it.
I wasn't. And I'm very committed to that. And I often chastise Guy when I know that he has sort of been mentally cheating on the film. Because what's the point in doing this stupid podcast if we don't do it right, you know? So
I do like that you threw Guy under the bus while you were meeting your own.
That's not true. I said that I chastise a
psychology graduate and a mediator.
Which I mentioned earlier.
Here for the record.
I actually found Guy very committed. He made himself a coffee. He made us both two teas, which weren't very nice, but that was my tea bag, so it's my fault. And he went to the loo once, but otherwise he was pretty engaged and he was quoting the show
slightly in advance of the film.
Yeah, and also at one point he started singing a song that was about to come in the next scene to me while looking at me. Do you know what
that's intense?
See, this is the sort of thing I'm talking about where I'm too, the movie, it doesn't make me, like, I'm still tense, but I think it blurs the lines of social normalcy. Because I don't think, was it okay that I sang that to you before it came in?
I mean, it didn't ruin a surprise.
But it wasn't, like, upsetting in any way.
No, it's just so confusing because you were singing it like I would know what it was or talked about or whatever.
See, that's, I really got
it. I remember my shining light, you two. I remember it because I actually messaged Guy, and Guy has forgot that I did this as well, but I did it at the time when it came on in the movie. So the gals are having a catch up at the cafe and swapping notes about how often they are having sex because Miranda's nervous about the fact that she hasn't had sex with her husband for 6 months.
And controversially, actually before that came out, but before all of the details of how recently Charlotte and Steve had had sex, Amy said, "You know what? 4.5 hours, that's not enough sleep." I'm with Miranda on this one.
Thank you. Yep.
It's good to know where you stand on that one. Immediately after that, Carrie goes, after Carrie says the disgusting thing about Big not colouring in the lines, she goes home
It's fucking awful and it doesn't.
It is gross, eh?
It's so gross.
We keep interrupting.
I want to insert this because you said, "What does that even mean, Amy?" I think it's a question that a lot of us have asked. So long as we have a guest, Tim, I suggest a segment called Outside the Lines.
Please. Please proceed.
So this week
Are you interrupting a segment to suggest a new segment?
Yeah, so this is called Outside the Lines.
We're here all the time, Amy. I want as much Amy as possible on this
Outside
episode.
The Lines with Amy Hoggart. So just pretty much, because it's a very visceral line.
Yeah.
What, I mean...
I think I know what it means.
Go ahead.
But I don't know why she would say that.
Well, we don't know what you're talking about.
Amy will say as well that Guy and I have multiple times articulated what we believe it is, and based on your
assured tone,
I think we're on the same page. But we want you to say it.
Oh, no. I think she means that.
This is adorable.
I think she means that when he.
You can do this, Amy. Cast aside that British reservedness.
Yeah. I don't think that I'm not English. Are you taking a picture or are you filming? He's filming. I think that she says that she means that when Big ejaculates, he does it everywhere. And I don't know why you would say. I don't know why it's always like, "How's your love life?" You'd be like, "Yeah, well, my guy." He always comes everywhere. He doesn't put it where it should be.
Very good.
Yeah.
Is that what you guys think?
That's all I wanted you to say. There's no other way to take it in. The man is coming all over everything. And
everywhere
it sounds like
he's not meant to.
The thing is as well, we're all adults here. Like, jizz is a tricky old substance to get out of stuff sometimes. Like if he's getting
out
in
stuff. Oh, I see.
Hey, you know, like stains and whatnot.
Yeah.
I've heard this hasn't happened in a situation I've been involved in, but I've heard terrible things about it getting in people's eye and that being a complete nightmare. You know, it stains clothes. She's got a lot of nice dresses. I can imagine a crumpled dress on the floor. Biggs going hog wild as he is wont to do. Apparently, I mean, it's a very regular thing.
This is the beauty of it, is it's not planned. It's not pointed. There's no politics to what he's doing. It's literally like it's not outside the lines and here.
It's so it's selfish, literally just, isn't it? This is what I imagine. And this might be a little too much for this podcast's general tone, but I imagine he and Carrie have pretty sort of normal sex, and just before he is due to climax, he kind of finishes himself, he like stands up and finishes himself off, and just whatever's in the way, fucking whatevs. The man doesn't care. Come on, he's like a cowboy shooting cans blind drunk.
I think he stands up, shuts his eyes, spins around 10 times, and then runs in a straight line and ejaculates into whatever the first thing he hits is.
That's the only way he can't come.
Carrie's like works so hard to whittle it down to a sexy and sort of coy way of describing the fucked up behavior of her like severely concussed former lacrosse playing partner.
And to be honest, the word economy on how she describes it is very good.
Oh, no. Siri thinks I'm talking to it.
I don't want to know what Siri's going to come up with.
This is happening. In the last 4 days, I have heard so many podcasts that have triggered Siri in the room while they've been recording. It's like it's just started happening. It's so weird.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Anyway, can I go back to my shining light? Amy, you go. Sounds like
she was just going to say that
wonderful.
You're no, it was a technical.
Is my
note,
voice going weird?
Yeah.
Hopefully the listeners won't hear that, but who knows? This thing's it's a fucking rickety old ship we're running here, mate.
You're back, Tim. You sound like your old self. For those of you wondering what happens, occasionally on this connection, Tim's voice goes up very high and slightly accelerated,
like a chipmunk.
Like a chipmunk. So your shining light, please.
So there they are on the balcony having a big old smooch, Carrie and Big, after this conversation. And the music that plays in the background is this kind of like low, sexy, I don't know what genre you'd describe it as. It's like, it's not quite lounge. It's like sexier than that. It's like a real soft, slow jazz sort of thing. And the only lyrics is just a woman's voice going, kisses. Kisses. And you just say the word kisses twice.
Enya's second cousin.
Ninya. The one who moved to the States. But it's just so, it's real dumb and I love it. I've heard it so many times now and I've never brought it up, but it's so stupid. It's, I love the idea of, I can't think of a good example now, but in comedy movies where they'll go to the trouble of like soundtracking it and making some songs that have dumb lyrics and you only kind of pick it up if you've really got your ears pricked up, and it feels like they're doing it there, like they are taking the piss.
I don't know that it was an Easter egg for comedy. It's more of a tonal feel. The musical choices, as always, the music does quite a lot of heavy lifting for mood.
The Disney music at the beginning was blowing my mind.
What? Yeah, because what you were saying, oh, because they were you said they scored Beethoven.
They scored Beethoven. So she's reading out poetry by Beethoven under or over horrible like Disney star music. And I'm like, definitely don't score Beethoven. So weird. No one sorted it through. This is when they're in bed.
And she's reading from her old library book.
It really feels like they're taking a lot of attempts to seem intellectual, eh? But they're doing it in a very uncultured way. They're just kind of cramming in quotes and ramming in Beethoven and jizzing outside the lines.
The classic thing to say if you don't read is to talk about the feel or smell of books. So she gets into bed and she's like, oh, books smell so good. And I just think, I don't think you're used to what you do with books. And then there's this other shot of Miranda just like in front of a load of books. And that's the only, she references work.
There's also the shot of Samantha
throwing the book. Like,
it's just so disrespectful to me. Sitting on the beach reading a book. If you're not enjoying it, you put it down and you sort of frustratedly look at it or like go on your phone. She hurls it over her left shoulder. Like,
she probably killed a crab or whatever is on
this fucking thing.
It was the secret. All books are not created equal, you know?
No, but even if you don't like it, someone will get value out of it. You also, not only do you think Carrie doesn't read, you don't think she writes.
She didn't really write. She wrote Love at one point. She has so much money.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And the whole film is just a love letter to money.
I would love to know in every film, there's a bit of world building that goes on. We're transported to a slightly different place from the one we are. That's like the whole escapism thing. What is the fucking economic model inside of this version of New York City? Like, Carrie Bradshaw is... The other bit that gets me is Samantha. I know Samantha Jones is doing well as an agent with one client, her boyfriend.
Yeah.
So she moves to Los Angeles.
She just fired or broke up with.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck, I didn't think about that. She's really next to her sole source of income when she did that. Her shopping trip just looks like the most expensive shit I've ever seen in my life.
I know.
Where she's like not getting any sex, so she decides to go buy things instead. It's crazy.
It's so weird. She spends so much money and then she's constantly flying back and forth from LA to New York for each scene.
Yeah.
And we know she travels in style. First class, baby.
It loses all impact when she turns up at the apartment when they're cleaning out Carrie's apartment because you've just seen her like 20 seconds ago and they do it like this big reveal. We're supposed to be excited to see Samantha. It's like,
And the other element of it is she's carrying those two bottles of champagne and that shits me more than it needs to because it's like they're all so rich in this movie.
Yeah.
It's not exciting to them.
No.
It's like they could be drinking that whenever they want anyway. So why is their friend who they see all the time with the thing they drink all the time remotely notable?
How could
that's
it
the
be?
Music doing the lifting because you're because that's a scene where it's actually quite like uplifting. They're packing up her house and stuff and she's trying these clothes on. But if I was like call my friends around and I was like, could you pack up my apartment with me? And then instead of packing anything up, I made them sit on my bed and watch me put my clothes on. And I think they'd be really angry.
That's also, I don't know how much, like, it's totally up to you how much you want to dig into this. But that's Run DMC. So it's also these four rich white women who are kind of bastardizing a real classic hip hop track to inject some energy into their fucking movie. Came out in 08, Amy. Can you imagine? I bring this up a lot, but like the global financial crisis is happening and this comes out at cinemas. God. Like you got people losing their jobs and their pensions. That was
credit crunch time. Because that's what the phrase you're using then.
You said at the States, this is so exciting. We've both moved to New York. You know, it's perfect that we're watching this here. Yeah. But the issue is that we're not dealing with the characters who have just moved or are making their way in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm assuming through how many 8 seasons, I think, or maybe even 10 seasons of the show, we've seen them accumulate wealth you know. I mean, for their lifestyles to function as they do in this movie, literally all of the TV show Sex and the City would have just been these four women at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 just hustling. It's funny how there's, I did, and I think because we're watching it now, 10 years later, we're in a different political climate. And I keep thinking, like, I don't care about your wealthy white person problems. Like, it's all, or there aren't really any massive problems in the film, but it's all just like the first few scenes are just Carrie meeting her friends, being like, oh my God, something great's happened. Like, he's asked me to move in with him. We're getting married. Like, there's not
a big, great apartment.
I've got a great apartment, but, and it, she keeps setting up that there's something bad, but there isn't. And they're constantly shopping and there aren't, there's only like one black person in it. And then she, and she's like easily the best character. And then
she comes along to fix everything.
Yeah. She's the assistant. She just solves these non-problems. And I just think that you couldn't really get away with a film like that right now.
Sarah Jessica Parker has actually acknowledged that the show could not exist. And probably, I think, the film's a part and parcel of what she was
saying. Should separate it out. The TV show, good. I think we can probably, or hopefully, I don't know. Amy, did you watch the TV show when it was like first coming out?
I didn't when it was first coming out, but then I had a roommate. Sorry, I had a cough and a roommate. I had a roommate who had all the DVDs and we were living with each other when we were studying and we would unwind by watching Sex and the City and I really liked it, but I don't think it stands up now.
But that's
anymore.
Okay. Nothing will really.
It's not as bad as the film.
When a show or any piece of art is made so in the zeitgeist at the moment, it's like the thing that makes it so powerful will be the thing that dates it so quickly as well.
Sex and the City created the zeitgeist, though. This is what we talked about in the last episode with Becky, is that it was a show that, you know, presented friendship between women in a way that hadn't really been, like, that hadn't been represented in the mainstream properly before.
But it annoys me because I don't think they present female friendship that well. I think they show you
in the show or in the movie.
I can't remember the show well enough, but I think in both, and certainly in the film, the women's friendship is lunching and dining and everything together. They'll physically sort problems out, like, hey, we're going on your honeymoon with you. I've ordered people to box your things up. But anytime anyone says anything about themselves that they're struggling with, someone brings it back to themselves. So it's all the conversations about emotional problems are a statement, and then someone going, oh, it's the same with me and my relationship.
So
and
true.
And then they talk about themselves. And that's not the strength. That's not what any friendship is. And it's making women, these are very selfish, narcissistic women.
Who do you like the best?
That is such an astute observation, Amy, because I didn't get that for like a couple rounds. But the script, I was going to say, the script is really, there's something weird about all this dialogue, and it's exactly what you just described. There's like a statement, and then someone goes, oh, yeah, that's like me, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then one of the girls will be like, oh, that's like me, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And like no one's really interacting with each other. They're just seeing an opening and projecting their issues.
There's no connection at all. And there's so much, like, you know, when they're in Mexico and they're having that dinner in the hotel and Miranda's just saying, well, don't get married to this, like, marriage sucks or something, to this couple who've just gotten married and they're making out passionately. And she's angry because she got cheated on. And it's like, your friend just got jilted at her wedding. Why are you talking about yourself? Why are you saying, bring your own shit? Just like anyone else would not be talking about it right then. But they can't connect like that.
None of their lives or problems are interesting enough to warrant conversation, let alone a whole movie.
Well, I think that's the problem with it. And when I was writing my notes, which I stopped doing because I did get so bored, but there's not really a plot. If you were to describe what happened, you wouldn't really be able to neatly tell me. There isn't like a one strong narrative with connecting narrative lines underneath it. That's just like Carrie's relationship, and at no point in the film do you know what her problem is that needs resolving, because she doesn't know whether she wants to get back with Big. She just kind of ends up lying on top of him at the end. So there's no clear problem and no clear path at any point.
The problem that Carrie's got in this first movie is that Mr. Big refuses to ejaculate into appropriate places.
I think that is it.
For example, a condom, a vagina.
I, I'd like to say I disagree. I don't think that's the problem with their relationship. Carrie's been so accommodating, but like to the point that she's learned to love Big's reckless approach to orgasm.
That's what she says. And sex life is.
I think for Big, it's almost like, well, here's purportedly the perfect woman who would tolerate any of my eccentricities or bizarre behaviors, and yet it's still not enough. And it is from there that he spirals into this jilting panic attack.
That is a classic hallmark, I think, of men in power. You give them anything and they just want more. Like, here's this, in the world of the movie, this great, accomplished, well-to-do New York writer, great independent woman who you've been in love with for 10 years, and she's accepted your random jizzing escapades. And it's not enough. You just got to self-destruct, you know?
It's never enough. And it's such a flimsy jilting.
That really annoyed me when they're trying to heighten the drama. If he gets cold feet, he just thinks, if only she would pick up her phone, that would mean I would marry her. And then when that's ridiculous. He doesn't need someone to pick up the phone. He needs to talk it through, or that he needs something more significant. And then he sees her getting out the car and he says, turn around, baby. And she doesn't turn around. And then he drives off. And that's also a really flimsy bit of drama, because we're meant to be like, oh, if she'd just turn around, or, oh, if the kid had not put her phone in the sparkly cupcake pack. Like, they have all these fake bits of drama that don't make any sense.
Speaking of, my shining light actually fell inside of one of these moments. And it was, I think it was 2 weeks in a row, or two eps in a row for the great Chris Noeth. When after the jilting's occurred and she's gotten through to him and he said, I was just there, I'm leaving. And she goes, what the hell? And he realizes he's fucked up, and he stops the car, they turn the car around. And then as he's going back, he sees the bridal party driving past in the other direction, and he steps out and Carrie steps out and they sort of meet on the road, and she runs up to him carrying this big bouquet, which she didn't need to come out of the car carrying that bouquet. I guess it's a weapon. But he runs up to her and he goes, Carrie. And then she strikes him on the face with this bouquet of white roses. And it's like, as his face after he's struck, it reads as, huh, that's weird. It seems like Carrie's pissed off with me. And it is just such a funny face to pull. It's like, of course you're going to get hit with, like, fucking read the street, buddy.
You just ruined her wedding.
The woman you just jilted is running at you carrying an object or an instrument.
With thorns, maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was so funny. I feel like it was only then that it occurred to him, beyond ramifications for himself, that the jilting had occurred, and that, you know, Carrie was now cross.
And it's so annoying that at that point, sorry.
You go, I mean.
Well, he's I think I'm right. He's gone back to maybe marry her, right? Like, something's made him turn the car around. At this point, he does want to marry her. But her hitting him with flowers is what stops it. So again, as the audience, we're meant to think, oh, they nearly did it again. But that's fake drama. That doesn't He would say, I want to marry you. I understand you're angry with me, but I want to marry you. Like, that's not enough to put someone off. And then the stuff with when later she's like, I don't want to hear from him, to her assistant. So make sure he can't hear from me. We all know he's going to be trying to contact you. It's a very easy solution to that. So again, there's not satisfying problems. Like, it's like the writers aren't good. They kind of know how drama works, but they aren't good enough to properly execute
writer it. Singular. And seriously, all of the characters were written as toddlers. So it's really important you remember that.
There's a Pixar rule that relates to this. How does it go? It's like, coincidence to get you into a problem is good. Coincidence to get you out of a problem is bad in terms of writing. It's something like that. And in this movie, there's like the phone and that sort of stuff. It's coincidence that creates drama, and that's like bad, lazy writing. In Big's mind, the way that this plays out is he gets struck with the rose. He doesn't get struck with the roses. He stops the car,
by the way,
after he realizes, hey.
I was just telling Amy that it is Mattress Pikelet penned this thing by himself.
That's he has so the strength
not
of 10 writers.
Into my writing room.
He has the strength of 10 writers, though.
Just crying and typing.
I reckon he wrote this on a typewriter, like a genuine old. What are they called?
I think he hired like 5 toddlers and watched them interact with each other for a weekend and wrote it all down. And then contextualized it. Yeah. Anyhow, you think he wrote on a typewriter, but you're talking about Big.
Big in his brain, this is how it plays out. Stops the limo, sees Carrie. She gets out of the car. He's like, hey, man, sorry about that. Let's go back in there. And then they do, and it's fine. Can you imagine how embarrassing it would be to just have all of your guests at this point? They're already both 20 minutes late. We know that when the 25. When the call 25 minutes late when the phone call happens. This driving sequence adds at least, like, from that moment about another half hour, and then they've got to get back to the church, or the library where they're getting married. So I'm going to round it up to an even hour. So these wedding guests, and this is a very highfalutin thing. We know that there's a lot of, like, fashionistas and socialites who've been attracted by this Vivian Westwood dress. So they're just cruising, just sitting around for an hour. How fucking crushing would that be to walk in and be like, oh, yeah, sorry, he bailed, but I've trapped him again, so we good. We're going to get our marry on.
The idea of Big and Carrie trying to make everyone sit back down as they walk in to go through with the wedding is devastating. Look, we're running out of time, and there's a theory that Amy stumbled into. I found it really exciting. I think it ties in quite nicely with something we've spoken about this season, Tim. Now, Amy, when Steve confessed to cheating on Miranda, the next scene we see Steve on the bed with their dog, a border collie, and Miranda walks in.
Uh-oh. And the dog jumps off.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, I know what he's been cheating on her with. And then later, Charlotte's like, I'm pregnant. She never says it's Harry's. There's so many people or things. Been fucking.
So the theory, because I didn't tell you this at the time.
What? But I got the first bit. It was gross, but I got it.
Steve's fucking his way through this. Because the theory that Tim and I had is that Steve and Smith Jarrett, through like mutual frustration in their relationships with two women who move in the same circle of friends and also are similarly self-absorbed and like frustrating as partners.
Yeah.
Get so annoyed by this that they wind up having casual
that
sex
would be hot.
That develops into somewhat of a relationship. But you've built out this world. You've broadened the idea by saying Steve's not like he's not faithful to Smith either. He's not into monogamy at this point in his life. He is literally fucking everyone and thing within dick's reach.
I also. Like, okay, first of all, I disagree with you guys because Smith has a lower sex drive. That's Samantha's problem.
That's probably why having sex with him wasn't enough for Steve.
It's just a guy. Well, I do think, he says something like, cheating on you, I've slept with someone else. And I just think if they change it to I've slept with something else. Honestly,
Amy, in my 17 watches, never have I ever connected those dots. That is amazing.
He says afterwards, it didn't mean anything, which also makes sense because
it was a dog.
This adds such an interesting dimension to a man who we have put a lot of baggage on already. For example, Steve is the mayor of New York City in our version of events, and he also
in the second movie
got rich selling dictionaries door to door. And he's also the father of Brady, is in the film. Brady becomes a rat king, where he descends into the underground sewer system of New York City and befriends some of the rats to start off with, and then eventually becomes their reigning sovereign, exacting his revenge on all of those who have harmed him through his united rodent force.
Partially through negligence from his parents, who are navigating their lives in a breakup instead of, you know, providing the necessary emotional care to help him grow into a well-rounded person. Magda's in cahoots with Brady, by the way.
Brady is the only one powerful enough to take on Dickbot, which is an artificial intelligence created by the Japanese to take on the Americans, which we see in Sex and the City 2 because Samantha fucks it.
We could retread this water all day, but we are
and
almost...
we will. It's going to be a six-hour special.
I don't think that's necessary. Now, you have a game you like to play, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Called Flop Piss.
No.
What's it called?
I don't like this running gag. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, what was the fucking thing that we committed to last episode? The game you made up that I said before you revealed what it was, we have to do it every year. And then I hated it. What was it?
Oh, yeah. No, that was Steve. That was... I don't want to bother you. I don't want to bother you people. Which is when
what
Steve...
What was even segment?
So when Steve shows up at the... He shows up outside the rehearsal dinner and he's like...
He says to
the four of them who are enjoying a legal Cuban cigar, goes, I don't want to bother you. And then Big goes, you're not bothering us. And then before Steve... It goes shot on Steve, shot on the group, then shot back on Steve. And before Steve says his piece... He has this wicked glint in his eye that suggests he actually really does want to bother these people. That maybe Steve's entire purpose for traveling cross town in a taxi is specifically to bother these people. I ask you, Amy, what do you think Steve was up to?
I thought that he, if you know there's a party going on, you know there's a toilet. I've always said that.
Yes. I'm with you. Totally
so
with you on
that. So he needs the loo. He's traveling around the city. He doesn't want to have to buy, you know, you to buy an expensive, horrible drink to use a toilet the other day.
Today.
And he knows there's a party there. So he goes on and then he sees everyone outside and he says, can I use the loo?
He goes, I don't want to bother you, but.
But I do need the toilet.
Is it number ones or number twos?
Oh, well, it could be number two and then it could foreshadow what's going to happen to Charlotte.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I see. Right. Yeah. Yes. Of
also,
course.
I mean, there's a high chance he's showing up just to case the joint for potential fuckery.
Like, are there any pets allowed at this party?
Do you reckon Steve has ever had sex with
Bugs? I heard Samantha's got a dog.
That looks like a rat.
Oh my god!
Do you ever think that he's ever slept with Big?
Mm.
Has he ever had his lines not colored in?
Exactly. That's the question I'm asking.
It's so nice. Sorry, I just won't get over this. How she's like, let's just say. And that's the best thing about her sex life is it comes everywhere.
And this is a writer who specializes on sex and relationships.
It's so weird. Carrie, I don't know if I'm making up connections here. And if I am, all power to me. But... In the series, Sarah Jessica Parker, I think, quite famously was the only one of the four leads, who doesn't get her kid off.
Mm.
And then even in the film, she, it's not just a question of getting her kid off. She won't even divulge anything sexual about her relationship. I mean, accidentally, she reveals a huge thing. But
do you think that might explain the line? If it's in her contract, now agents were like, SJP will not say anything about her sex life unless it's a colouring in metaphor. Yeah. That's the only way.
Very specific stipulation.
It's got to be.
And then, like, on the contrary, they farm out the two. Oh, apart from the Dante and the, you know, parade of people who he has sex with next door to Samantha, they farm out the really graphic set. Like, because Sex and the City did portray sex on screen in a way that hadn't been with a focus on. You know,
you
the way
saw
it's
people
experienced
fuck
by a woman.
Is what guys trying to say,
and it was
people fucked on that show.
I remembered it when we were watching it just now. I was like, oh, I remember a sex scene because I was like, I love Steve, and I was like, I remember him and Moran having sex once, and then Guy was like, I think that scene's in the film, and I've never forgotten it.
It's so because like it's so for the tone of the rest of the film, it's like this is what it looks like when two people fuck.
It was it's very passionate.
Yeah, it is.
I'll be thinking about that later. Oh, I don't mind you knowing that. One of my notes, by the way, is expensive boner, 2 exclamation marks, but I don't know what that.
Oh, that's about the gag when she says, I've got to go, something came up, and Smith has put the case in which the diamond ring is inside of his jockeys as though it's a boner.
Did you want to speak to that, Amy?
Didn't like it. Didn't like the fact that the idea of you, like, if I was doing my own thing and someone just came up with their boner, I'd be like a little bit annoyed. And maybe that makes me sound bad, and maybe my boyfriend will listen to this and be like, yeah, that's a problem for us. But it just annoyed me. And then also, I would if I wanted to buy something and my boyfriend was like, I made you think for a while that you couldn't get it, and then I paid like 5 times the amount I needed to get it by being in a bidding war, I'd be so angry with the waste of the money.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense why he did that.
Fucking ludicrous, eh?
It's a disgusting ring as well. And
it is horrible.
Significant later.
It's gross.
She's
looks
like every time I look at the ring, I'm like,
it's one you would win so from ugly. An arcade if you had 150 tickets on the boxing machine when you were 10.
Yeah.
It's so garish.
Or like that in a Christmas cracker, you know, when there's always a gift.
Yeah.
And then they all aren't spent a bit more money on the crackers this year, but they're still crackers, so it's not that much money.
Yeah.
That's the gift you get inside.
That
and then
ring.
You know you're going to leave it on the table anyway.
Smith Garrett.
The by the end of the night.
Spent $50,000 fucking dollars on that Christmas cracker ring.
Was it $50,000?
Well, yeah. So long as we're here, Tim, I will fulfill your desire to play the pop quiz game because I observed the auction house
you,
in which this,
can
this
I just
auction
say,
takes place.
You brought this up, but go on.
Oh, yeah, but it's your game. You love it.
Yep. I don't like it anymore. I want to get rid of it.
Okay, we can do that. This will be the last one. Also, we have to resolve whatever the fuck I asked in the last episode because I can't remember what it was. Actually, I might be able to look at... so the question for this episode is, what is the auction house at which the girls go and bid on the divorce auction items?
Oh, no.
Because the game is... It's so Tim and I pay attention.
Fuck.
We do a pop quiz, so we ask one random question about a specific detail from the film.
Just to make sure we're paying attention?
No, he's just upset.
And I've already revealed...
He can't remember.
...that I... was not paying as much attention as I should have been this time. Fuck. Is it like, so I'm going to assume that this is only visual, right? No one says it, but it's like probably on a wall or on an exterior shot of the auction house. Can you at least give me that?
Yeah, as they walk past
I got
it,
nothing.
So Carrie's bragging about her apartment. She walks past.
Christie's.
Yes.
Oh, no.
That's really weird.
It's the second,
that's the only auction house I know.
It's the second time you've, oh man, this is embarrassing for me. I'm embarrassed.
Very impressive. Now, Tim, the question I asked you last week was, what color are the uniforms of the maids at the Mexican resort? And you assured me that you'd pay enough attention to relay the information
well,
to
me. Well, you told me.
What do you got?
You told me last time it was yellow with a, from memory, blue trim.
Oh, well, I've fucked it then, haven't I?
Yeah. But that's okay. I remembered you telling me. I don't remember seeing it this week because I was probably on
it's yellow
Twitter.
With a white trim.
Oh, fuck.
Man, it's a great website. You got to fire that stuff out. Amy,
I've got another really angry note. Can
oh,
I
yeah.
tell you what it was? This is
your parting shot.
I underlined it.
Okay.
I've written down and I've underlined it twice. That's not how diarrhea works. It isn't.
It
you don't
isn't.
Open your mouth in the shower and then you get gurgles immediately.
No.
You are someone who has,
so angry.
Has not even shat herself.
I've never shat myself.
But you're obsessed with toilet humor. You want to see poo everywhere.
Absolutely. I'm the type of person who'd relish in himself. I've never been so lucky.
Amy, thank you so
much. Thank you for having me. I'm so sorry.
Amy Hoggett, tell us what we should watch you on and where we can find you.
I'm on Full Frontal with Samantha B.
Where can we get you on Twitter? I'm going to put it in the episode description as well, but where can we find you on Twitter and whatnot? What do you use? Are you an Instagram person?
Yeah. Every now and then. I shouldn't say that. I'm a reliable follow. It's just my name, Amy Hoggett, and then there's an underscore for Twitter, which I think I'm a bit better at.
Beautiful.
But not much.
Well, follow her on there. Thanks for coming on the show, Amy. We love you lots.
Thank
You're
you for
fantastic.
Having me. We love you more. I love you.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know, like he sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.